Woohoo! We're back. I'm ready for more. Are you ready for more?
Yes. I'm certainly ready for more.
Excellent.
Look, we've had a lot of questions about virtualization, about the platforms. Well, if you can hang on for around about 20 minutes, we're going to get...
A little bit of time.
30 minutes. We're going to get right onto that topic. So hopefully we'll answer all those questions about running on VirtualBox and on Macs and
Excellent.
Other hardware. So we'll cover
that.
It's
good to know.
But the first part of this session is all about giving you a sneak preview, if you like, of pretty much everything else we're going to talk about over the next 2 days. So it's an overview of all the new features from a developer's perspective that we've got in Windows Phone 8. So this is kind of a coming up in the rest of this course.
Excellent. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Okay, so we can get to the slides. There we go.
All right.
All right.
M1B.
Yeah. There we go. So this is where we're at in the schedule. So part two of the opening session. So I know a lot of you guys, you really want us to get in. You don't like to see all these slides and stuff, but we will get into code, more code than you could imagine very soon. But this is about still setting the scene and giving you a preview of what the features are. And then the second half of this session, we're going to get into how you get started, how you get the tools, where you can install it and that kind of stuff.
Good stuff to know.
And a few demos of showing you what we've got in the tool set. And then immediately the next session and the one after that is the one I mentioned where we're going to pretty much build an app from beginning to end. So you'll get a good overview of the whole process.
I'm looking forward to that, Andy.
So am I.
Yeah.
All right. So the new features for developers in Windows Phone 8 coming up. We will be talking about the new tile template. So this is the key feature that differentiates Windows Phone from other smartphone platforms. So we've got three tile templates that we can take advantage of now in Windows Phone 8. There's the flip one, which is actually pretty similar to the tile template that we had in Windows Phone 7.1. So it flips from front to back. You can write content onto the front of the tile and onto the back of the tile. But we've now actually, for all of these, we've got three sizes supported. So we've got the middle one there is the kind of tile size that you will have been used to seeing on Windows Phone 7 devices. But we've now got a small tile size, so the user can select to shrink the tile down to a quarter size. And then we've got the double width size, so you can actually have a big tile. And all of the features you can see in these tiles are all addressable by you as a developer. We've got the iconic one, which is a clean layout designed to reflect Windows Phone design principles.
Authentically digital.
Authentically digital.
Yes.
So it takes the accent color and then a monochrome icon that gets put on it, and you can put a count and a little bit of text on it. So nice and clean, very digital. And then the cycle one, you can cycle through up to 9 images. So
we're
going to be looking at how you program all of those. And these are updatable from your foreground app, from background processing, and from push notifications from the cloud. So we'll look at all of those.
Excellent.
We have got the lock screen. So the lock screen, of course, is what the user sees when they first turn on their phone. This is the lock screen that comes up when they haven't been using it for a while. And in Windows Phone 7, you would see on the lock screen just counts for the first-party apps. So we make a distinction between first-party apps and third-party apps. So first-party apps are the kind of built-in apps such as the mail client and calendar and all these kind of stuff. So it was reserved to the first-party apps in the old version. So you could see the calendar would have the bulk of the text underneath the date there, and then you have little icons for, you know, like missed calls, for new SMS messages, for new emails, that kind of thing. But now in Windows Phone 8, you can actually set your app up as a potential lock screen image data provider. So both the data at the bottom or the text underneath the date, you can provide that, or you can actually set up your app to be potentially one that could provide the image that's shown on the lock screen.
That's very cool.
The user still remains in control. They have
right.
to select your app, but you can actually, at least you can program your app to be able to feed that data. So that's the lock screen feature. There's a whole bunch of launchers. And launchers are a set of APIs that you call as a developer to perform common tasks. And what they do is they actually invoke one of the first-party applications. Typically, you'll be launching the camera, for example, to take a snapshot, or the Maps app, or you might put up a dialogue to create a contact or create an email or go to one of the settings to turn on Bluetooth. These are all invoked by launcher APIs. So you call one of these guys and it brings up the first party app. And they're called launchers because what the idea of these is that you don't have 15 slightly different ways of all doing the same thing. So,
right.
So, you know, you can call the launcher to do it, and that's the only way you can do these kind of things. We've got a bunch of new ones now. So there's now we can create calendar appointments in Windows Phone 8. Couldn't do that before. You can share media on social networks, so photos and music. And then there's a whole bunch of new ones around the new maps control, of which more later.
Excellent.
In fact, of which more now. In fact,
oh.
The new maps control.
Imagine so, that.
Windows Phone 8 has a new maps control. So the Bing maps control from Windows Phone OS 7.1, if you've used that in your existing apps, not a problem. It's still supported. Your apps will still run. You can still program it exactly the same way. But you should consider that as deprecated. So one of the advantages of the agreement between Microsoft and Nokia was Nokia's superior mapping technology has been brought to all Windows phones, not just those supported by and provided by Nokia. It's a faster rendering map, vector-based. There's some nice new map modes. And we've got a session on there. We'll look deeper into how you can program that. It's a nice mapping solution. So that is provided. Kind of allied to that as well is there's a new location API, which is one of these that is shared with Windows 8. So mm-hmm. we've got a new Windows runtime location API is on Windows Phone. So you can create portable code in that area where you've got exactly the same between what you use in Windows Phone 8 and what you've got on your Windows 8 version of your app. Again, as with all of these, the old API is still there. You could still carry on using those. But we've also got a new background location tracking mode. So this is continuous background location tracking. And this enables scenarios such as, if you're going out running or you're going cycling or something, you can track your route and offer turn-by-turn navigation apps. So in the past, as soon as an application like that would lose focus, it would stop working.
Absolutely.
So now that is now enable us to keep on operating. Speech. Now, this is one of my favorite features because this is a great API. It's very, very easy to create voice commands, which your users can use to actually launch your app. And they are deep linked. Now, deep link is a term you'll hear us use quite a few times, which means to not just launch an app right at its regular start page, but you can launch into a specific experience. So you can give a voice command with some context, and you can program your app to launch at a specific page, give the user the information they're looking for.
Right.
And that's one aspect of it. The other thing is, of course, speech, text-to-speech, so you can have your app talk out text to the user. And speech reco as well. So you recognize speech. So you can have a whole structured dialogue between your application and the user. So that's pretty interesting. And it's great fun. We have fun demos for that.
I'm looking forward to that. Yeah.
Wallet. So this is one of the new first-party apps on Windows Phone 8. What it is an area where your user can store cards. And cards is kind of a loose concept, if you like. It's not just about credit and debit cards, but certainly you can store those in there. It's also about loyalty and membership cards, airline cards and loyalty things and coupons and deals and that sort of thing. So it's an entity on the phone. It's a hub on the phone that you can interact with, your application can interact with, can update data in there. So you can create an app. Hopefully, you'll create an app for a big customer who has a customer base with a loyalty scheme or a payment card or of that kind, and you can create an app that brings that card alive so they can go into the wallet hub on the phone and look at information, their recent transactions or information or deals associated or coupons associated with that card. There's different ones, so you can actually have different cards like there, and you can actually have different deals as well. So you can
we like deals.
Deals are cool.
Yes, we love deals.
Yeah. Now, in terms of the UI controls, so this is now XAML controls we're talking about, in what you're building your UI from. Not a lot of change, actually, from Windows Phone 7.1. So like I said before, if you're used to using XAML to create your UI, there's not a whole, you know, great shift of anything new you have to learn here. The big change is that this control called the long list selector has been incorporated into the SDK. Some of you will be familiar with this control because it was in something called the Silverlight Toolkit, which is this add-on extra collection of controls.
And very popular control.
Very popular control, because what it does, it's kind of the Swiss Army knife of list boxes.
Certainly.
It's very much more flexible than the standard list box because you can do things like you can see on the slide here. You can actually have these jump lists. So where you've got a big list, this is kind of equivalent to the semantic zoom you get on Windows 8 if you're familiar with that on Windows 8. It allows you to navigate through a large collection of objects. So you can actually tap on the D square in the middle there and it will jump out to the kind of zoomed view on the right. So you can then zoom into a particular letter of the alphabet and dive into the middle of the collection. You can also, the graphic on the left shows where you can put footer controls and headers as well. So you can actually have a richly formatted list. But it's actually now also, the advice is the team would like you to use this for all your lists, not just so at a minimal level, you don't need all this jump list, although it obviously does all that. But even just for a standard list, it's a drop-in replacement for the list box. There's no programming changes. You can simply change the control from a list box to a phone:long list selector. It'll work just the same.
That's good to hear.
But it's been rewritten right at its core, so you actually get better performance than you would with the list box. So that's the key change in there. Pivot and panorama are now in ROM, which again means you're going to have greater performance. Much better performance. If you were using those controls under Windows Phone 7.1, they would get compiled. They were in a kind of an external library, so they'd be included into your Zap and be shipped with every single app that used those controls. They're now in ROM, so shared across all apps on the phone. Got better performance. And also the memory overhead of the control isn't allocated to your application now, so your memory headroom is better memory usage of your app. And we also mentioned the web browser control in the previous one, which is now based on Internet Explorer 10. So those are the key changes. Not a lot else. The Silverlight Toolkit has been renamed to the Windows Phone Toolkit,
right,
and has a bunch of new stuff in it. We'll talk about that in a couple of hours' time.
It's always good stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of out leading ahead.
It is. It's a lot of fun stuff in there.
Yes.
Three screen resolutions. So up till now, Windows Phone 7.1 we've just been in the left one there, WVGA 800 by 480. It's a 15:9 aspect ratio.
You know, when we kind of started Windows Phone 7, 800 by 480 seemed like a pretty high resolution, didn't it?
It did.
It seemed like, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Not so much anymore, huh?
No, not so much anymore. No. So yeah, WVGA, so you've still got that, and it's still rich, you know, it's a nice, good experience. But there are also now two higher resolution than that as well. So WXGA, which is the same aspect ratio, 15:9, but it's 1280 by 768.
Wow.
And then there's a slightly taller version of that, the 720p version, which is 1280 by 720, which is a slightly different aspect ratio of 16:9. Now, we'll talk about programming that later on, but the good news is you don't have to worry about it very much because hardware scaling takes care of a lot of the differences. So you can carry on designing UI to more or less 800 by 480, some differences with the 720p. But we'll cover that in session 3. So in the camera and the photos, we've got a bunch of new stuff in here. There's a new get preview image method to return thumbnail images. That's pretty useful. You can now create a rich media editor photos extensibility. So that's a whole new way of integrating with the built-in Photos Hub. We're not actually going to have time to cover that on this course, but read the docs if you're interested in that. There's a background photo auto upload, so you can create an application that, you would create your own cloud repository for photos, your own version of Flickr or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can actually have an app that installs onto the phone and will auto upload any of the pictures the user takes to your cloud repository. So in the Photos Hub, the user can select to automatically upload. By default, you get SkyDrive,
right,
so that you can upload it to your Microsoft account in the cloud. But yeah, your user can choose to send it to another cloud repository if you like. There's also a bunch of advanced camera capture APIs to, if you want really fine control of the camera. So this has been getting better every release. Basically, in 7.0, all you could do is take a snapshot.
Right.
And then we've got much more control getting... You can actually capture frames from the directly from the hardware. And now you can go right down and adjust properties such as the ISO, the balance and exposure. So you've got very, very good control of the camera. So that's an option for you if you're doing photo... camera-based or picture photo.
It's a really popular, especially with a particular new phone I can think of that has an amazing camera.
Indeed, yes. Yeah, yeah. Great cameras on the new phones in general, but one in particular is very good. Right, media. There's not a lot in here. Media library class, some couple of new methods to help you work with your media collection, so save, song, and delete methods. With pictures, there's that get thumbnail method again, so you can actually easily get a thumbnail from pictures that are in the user's camera roll. And then a couple of new args that make background audio playing a little bit easier, so just changes in that. Voice over IP is interesting. This is now being integrated right into as a first party sort of call handler on the phone.
People are going to love that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So there was a Skype app, for example, take one example, on Windows Phone 7, which was great because you could make Skype calls out and that was pretty good. But you couldn't accept incoming calls unless the app was actually running. And it's actually the active application. As soon as it lost focus, your incoming call handling was lost. So that's not true on Windows Phone 8. So voice over IP apps now have a kind of a deep connection to any incoming call. So they are active, if you like, for incoming calls at any one time. And it's not just about Skype either. So these voice over IP APIs are available to anyone.
So you could add VoIP to your apps, anything you want.
You can. Like I said, it's a completely integrated in as a first-class citizen on the phone. So you've got all the... it actually looks and behaves like one of the
first-party
apps. You don't really know the difference.
Right.
Yeah. Bluetooth and NFC. This is pretty good, especially as NFC is a feature that is not supported by all our competitors. You can actually do great stuff with Bluetooth. You can. There's a couple of scenarios we'll look at. There's Bluetooth used as an app-to-app communication channel or app-to-device, so you can do cute stuff like run helicopters and robots and all that kind of stuff.
Love that stuff.
Yeah. The proximity API is the name of the API that is at the heart of all of this sort of thing. The kind of eye-catching feature here is that with NFC, we can now read and write to NFC tags, but also you can do tap to connect, and not only between one phone and another, but also between a phone and a Windows 8 slate.
Ooh, very nice.
Those that have got NFC on them.
Excellent.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. We've got some nice demos for that. And there we go. This is the tap and share, like I said. Some Windows 8 slates, not actually the Surface. It doesn't have NFC in it. But the Samsung one that they gave out at Build, for example, and a lot of new slates coming along, have got NFC support, which does enable this tap to share scenario, which is kind of nice. Related to that as well, since we're kind of getting into networking here, we've got the Windows Phone Runtime, windows.networking.sockets API. So we've got now, this is one of those areas where you've got a choice as a managed code developer. You can use the Microsoft.NET Sockets library, or you can use the Windows Phone Runtime Sockets library. The big enhancement here for both of them is that we've got listener sockets. So you couldn't actually, if you wanted to do a socket-to-socket connection between two phones, you couldn't actually do that on the Windows Phone 7 because you didn't have a listener socket.
Right.
So you kind of had to use an intermediary in the cloud or something crummy like that. But we've also got support for IP version 6. I've mentioned this already, in the native API set, we've got WinSock support in there. MicroSDs. So you can actually now read from an SD card. You cannot write to one, but you can actually stick an SD card into those phones that support it. So it's supported by the platform. Whether that feature is going to be exposed by the phone, you have to actually look at the features. Just as an example, the Nokia Lumia 820, you can put an SD card in, but it's kind of not on the outside of the cover. You've got to take the battery out and there's a slot in there. The Lumia 920, that's not provided to you. So it's up to the hardware manufacturer whether that feature is going to be exposed to you.
So you always need to test to see if there's something there.
Yep.
Don't assume.
Don't assume. And when the user puts an SD card in, it's there primarily for them to extend their storage so they can put their photos and music and videos on there. But it also allows you to use it as a way of sideloading content. So you can actually put big map files or databases or big data files on, and you can stick that into the phone, and your application could read that data off there. So it's a way of sideloading additional content into an app.
Right, absolutely.
Contacts. So we've always had pretty good access to since 7.1, we've had pretty good access to the contacts collection on the phone. But there's an actually interesting new thing, this idea of custom contacts. So if you wanted to create a contact, there was a launcher for that where you could launch out to create a new contact. Create a new contact, and then you go launch into the first party dialog, and then you'd store that contact in your Outlook or in the cloud, in Microsoft account or that sort of thing. But now you can actually have an application, and the user would have to confirm that through the launcher and say, yep, save it. But now actually contacts can create custom contacts, which also they're stored in the hub, but they're completely private to that application. We'll talk about that when we get to it. It's kind of interesting one. You might be thinking, oh, what's that for? It's actually for apps where they've already got their own user base in the cloud, for example. So you want to be able to surface those contacts on the phone and allows them to interact with the application. This is the erroneously named app-to-app communication feature. Now, we sort of laugh about this because it does enable app-to-app communication, but that's only kind of one feature of it.
Right.
It's actually all about having an application that can register a file association. This is very close to the same story on Windows 8. So an application can say, oh yeah, I know about .andy files or something. And then if your user happens to open a .andy file, maybe from the browser or maybe it comes as an attachment on an MMS message or that sort of thing, then it will automatically launch your app to actually handle that file. So it's a private file format. So you can do that. Similarly, there's a protocol as well. So one application can launch a protocol, and the protocol is the first bit of a URI. HTTP, of course, is a protocol. But you can actually create your own custom one, My Protocol, which is, again, your app registers for it and will launch that application. Right. In-app purchase as well. We have a good, strong story in-app purchase. This is a way that you can sell virtual products for real money. So the idea is that you upload to the Microsoft Store a bunch of in-app purchase products, which you can then sell from within your app. You can offer to your users, and they can purchase them against credit cards that you might have stored in the wallet, for example.
Right.
And Microsoft provides this commerce infrastructure to support all this, which includes methods for users to pay in 190 regions around the world. So it's a pretty rich offering. And in-app purchasing is a pretty exciting way for you to monetize your application. So we're going to dig deep into that. And there are two kinds of items that you can sell: durables and consumables. So durables is something that a user can buy and they own it forever. So that would be typically new levels in a game. They bought your app and you ship it with a couple of basic levels to get them started, and then you might offer additional levels as an in-app purchase.
Right.
Once they bought it, obviously they can use that forever. Consumables is this idea of something that you use and is used up. So a bunch of tokens and this sort of thing. So once you've spent your tokens, you need to buy a whole bunch of new ones. So these two kind of in-app purchase things are supported. Enterprise app. Got a good story. So one of the good focuses of Windows Phone 8 is support for enterprises. First of all, enterprises can build their apps and distribute them to their internally to themselves. They can publish their own applications. So enterprise app deployment means that they don't have to go through the store.
Right.
But there's still a whole security story around this, of course. So
absolutely.
You have to get the tools, you have to be approved as an enterprise supplier, and they, as part of that, you get given a digital certificate that you need to use to sign your internal apps, and there's a process for enrolling your phones for doing those kind of things. So this is the process. You develop your apps, and then you get your certificate and you apply it to your devices, and then you sign your applications, and then you distribute them in some way, and there's a number of different ways of doing that. The company manages and revokes on command these applications, keep control of it. So it's an attractive way of distributing your own apps. And there's a whole bunch of other stuff. There's a good device management story coming, and things like the hardware, I haven't mentioned this, actually supports BitLocker. Another advantage of the combined hardware platforms, we've got BitLocker on devices, which can be turned on by an internal corporate IT, enabled on corporate devices.
Right.
So the company hub is a bunch of APIs that allow you to, as an enterprise, to develop your own internal apps. And the APIs allow... allow you to create an example here is a Panorama app, for example, where you have a lot of panes of information that are reaching out to your users, and it's enterprise-specific information. That's kind of everything you're seeing there on the right. What you're seeing in the left, the frame there, is one pane on this particular Panorama example shows my apps, and this is driven by some APIs that are provided for allowing you to find out what apps, private apps, company, corporate apps, have been installed onto your device. So in this example, we put a tile up that shows which applications you've already installed. And then underneath that Get More Apps link, that would typically take you to an intranet site where you could go and download and install some additional applications. There are other ways of installing corporate apps, email or micro SD, or indeed with highly managed devices, you can get your corporate IT can install apps on.
But what we're actually expecting is after your company has rolled out Windows Phone 8 devices to all your employees, the very first app you'll deploy will be the company hub.
Yeah.
And then that'll make it easy from there on to see those internal apps to get privately.
Yep.
I'm sure that's how it's going to play out.
That's indeed. Yeah, that's right. We've got good support for right-to-left languages. So languages such as Arabic, Hebrew, and Persian, they're really well served now, so that's exciting. Also, these languages, where the language flows from right to left, so often need to incorporate some left-to-right content in as well, such as an example there is a network share name.
Right.
So we can actually have bi-directional content. So you can have your regular flow is right to left, and then it could stick a little bit of left to right in there. And that's handled by the flow direction property on the run element. So we've got good support for all those different scenarios. Now, the consumer store coverage. This is a pretty good story. So we've now got support for consumer store in over 180 countries. So when we launched a few years ago, we just had 29. Then with the major update last year, the Mango update, that went to 63. And now, with Windows Phone 8, that has expanded to over 180 countries.
That's a lot of countries.
It's a lot of countries. And these are all potential customers for your apps.
Right.
So
a lot of opportunity.
A huge market to go for, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this does actually exceed what the competition can offer. So it's a big opportunity.
Combined.
Combined. Well, in fact. Indeed, as it is.
Yeah.
Similar story for developers. So previously we were talking about consumers. So consumers who have phones where they go on the store app and they can choose apps to install. So that's 180 countries supported on there. It's pretty much the same countries for developers. So developers who are creating apps and submitting them into the store, you had to be in a supported country for that to happen. Now, when we started, there was 38 countries were supported with Windows Phone 7.x. And now that has expanded to over 180 countries. So it's a good story. If you're not in one of those 180-plus countries, there's still other... Microsoft has some global publishing partners who can help you and submit your apps on your behalf to the store and handle that submission process for you. Languages as well. So this is the language support of the operating system, the phone, which languages, how the phone interacts with the end users. So we had 24 supported previously. And with Windows Phone 8, that now goes up to 50 different languages on the phone. including, much to my surprise, I didn't realize this, actually English UK is one of the new languages. Yeah,
that's a huge addition.
So I hope that means we can have speech things while we're going for a nice cup of tea or something.
Whatever. Yes, proper English.
Proper English.
For a change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, from a developer's point of view, this is exciting because if you're going to use... these are all opportunities for you to sort of localize your apps or do speech and this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You could actually localize your app into one of the less well-served languages, and you could be number one in Lithuania or somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not a bad idea.
Indeed. So that's not on the list. I chose one that wasn't on the list.
You just had, yeah, it's on there.
How about, okay.
We were already on there.
Yeah, so one of those languages. So you've got great support for reaching out. If you want to localize your application into different languages.
And we make it really easy this time around for localization, don't we?
Yeah, I'm going to cover that in the next session after next. And last but definitely not least, Windows Phone 8 apps run faster.
We feel the need for speed, don't we, Andy?
We do. And this is not just about the fact that we've got great new multi-core hardware and running at faster processor rates.
Right.
It's actually because now when a user downloads an app from the store, installs it onto their Windows 8 phone 8 device, as part of that process, it's compiled to native code in the cloud. So previously, you'd download the app to the device and it would be jitted just in time compiled when you ran it. Now that jitting is done for you up in the cloud. So what you're getting is native code ready to go. So it's super fast. And this is one reason why when we're talking about the hybrid native apps and the you don't necessarily get the super speed increase that you might expect from incorporating native code into a managed app, because your managed app is running
so
natively
fast
anyway.
Now. Yeah.
And the most obvious manifestation of this is that on Windows Phone 8 devices, you don't often see a splash screen anymore. Because that was the time before where the JIT compiler would be compiling your code and getting it all ready to run the app, and there would be a bit of a pause while that went on. You hardly see a splash screen anymore because it's so fast. So this is really good, and it's one of those hidden benefits of Windows Phone 8 devices.
And it's a benefit for our customers.
Absolutely.
You know, user experience is a broad umbrella.
Yep. And everybody who's had a Windows Phone 8 device has remarked on the speed of these things. So it's a good story.
Definitely. Even the old apps.
Even the old apps, yeah. That's right. You don't have to upgrade your Windows Phone 7.x devices to 8 to get that performance advantage.
Right. The 120,000 apps for Phone 7 all get compiled in the cloud as well.
Yeah.
So it's good stuff.
Just before we pass on to Rob to talk about the developer getting started and that sort of thing, just again, keep your questions coming. One particular question we've had is like, does the speech support other languages such as Spanish? Absolutely it does.
Yeah.
So we got good support for different languages in speech, and we'll be tackling that when we look at the speech tomorrow.
Definitely.
Yep.
All right. Let's dive into how we're going to get started developing for Phone 8. I know you want to know what steps do you need to take to accomplish that. So obviously step one is you've got to get the tools. And so we have this developer phone center. In the past, you've been to our app hub. You typed in create.msdn.com. You can still type that in now, and I think it'll redirect you. You have your choice to get there. But the new site is dev.windowsphone.com. And you get the SDK to download, and it's free. This is the great part. I mean, we're adding so much value to our developer community out there. If you don't own anything at all, you just download the tools. They're free. You can get running and start making apps. And then we just give you a wealth of content, information on articles and the forums and information to help you learn whether it's new stuff for Phone 8 or if it's you're a beginner and you've never done development before. We've got a lot of great articles to get you started there, to get you going. And so when you go to the Developer Center, this is what you would expect. This is what it looks like today. Nice and colorful. You kind of get a view of some of the live tiles for some of the apps, and you can see where you can get the SDK and things like that and submit your apps. So let's talk really quick, though, about PC requirements in order for you to develop apps. So currently, in order to build a Windows Phone 8 app, you need to be running Windows 8 on a 64-bit version of Windows 8 on your machine, on your PC, on your laptop, your desktop. And then we talked about you can see here the hardware specs, the 8 gig of free space, and the 4 gig of RAM to run all that memory. And then the other critical thing to talk about here is the emulator. you know, if you're running on a device, you can always plug in the device and do what you want. But for our emulator, which we're running inside Hyper-V, we not only do you have to be running on Windows 8 Pro or higher, but you have to be using something called second level address translation. It's part of the chipset in there. And so let's take a look at that SLAT thing, because you're probably wondering, what is SLAT? It's just a requirement. It has to do with some of the hardware acceleration and things like that to enhance the performance of a virtualized image in Hyper-V. If you have a machine, a computer, a PC, that's running one of the Core i processors, like the i3, i5, i7, those kind of things, what would you say in the last couple of years or so?
Yeah, this SLAT thing, it has had a lot of coverage. But pretty much if you've bought a professional standard PC over the last year or so, it's going to have a Core i processor of some kind. You will have the necessary support for SLAT. AMD has an equivalent in their higher-end processors as well.
That's good to know.
Yeah, but it does mean this is a slight difference from what you may have used if you're coming from a Windows Phone 7 development environment. So unfortunately, this requirement is there. It's there to support this great emulator, which is a step up from what we had before.
Right.
But it does need, because it's built on top of Hyper-V, this is where this requirement comes from. The other thing about Hyper-V as well, let's say about that. So let's just stress this point because there's a lot of confusion. Hyper-V client is needed to run the emulator. So if you want to run the emulator, you need Windows 8 Pro or Windows 8 Enterprise. If you don't want to run the emulator, if you have a real device you can test on, which is just as easy, to be honest, as working with the emulator, then you don't need the Pro or higher. You can go for a lower edition of Windows 8. And also, it does mean that you can run the Windows 8 SDK and do application development on itself on a virtualized box. So, but you won't be able to run the emulator, because Hyper-V emulator, you can't run Hyper-V on a virtualized platform.
Right. Virtualization within virtualization
doesn't sit well.
Not good performance there. Yeah. Anyway, you can see here some tools, some of our famous sysinternals tools that you can download from TechNet. Here's kind of a view of kind of what the command line might look like, so that you can do a quick check. If you're not certain and you want to check in advance, you can download this and run this command line, and you can real quickly tell if your PC supports that. So once you've got that taken care of, the next thing you're going to want to do is you need to get that developer account to get going. So you know where to go, the website, and you got to have that developer account because you may want to unlock your phone so that you can develop, so you can tether it to your PC to do debugging and test it on your phone. And so that's part of it. And so if you already have an MSDN subscription, then you're already good to go. If you are a part of the DreamSpark program, you're in good shape. And then if you're an individual developer and you're not a part of either of those two programs, it's going to be a $99 charge each year to be part of the program. And again, like I said before, you go to dev.windowsphone.com. All right, so let's take a quick look at the development tools that you'll be using to get going with all this.
The first thing to say, of course, is the DevTools is free.
Yes.
So you download the SDK completely free.
Free is good.
Free is great.
Yeah, free is good, So the first thing, you're probably just wondering, why are we looking at Zune here? Yes, because clearly, isn't that right, Andy? If you're doing a Phone 8 development and you're either tethering to a Phone 8 device, you don't need the Zune software.
No, that's correct. So you always needed Zune. In fact, when you used to plug in a Windows Phone 7.1 device, you plug that into a laptop, it would prompt you to download and install Zune, because Zune was the conduit for, syncing your music and everything.
Right.
And it was also the conduit for you from Visual Studio to connect to that device if you wanted to actually test and develop your apps on a real device.
So the cool thing is about in Visual Studio 2012 and doing development with our new tools, we're not throwing you under the bus when it comes to developing for 7.1 devices. And so we fully support that. It's just you'll need Zune if you still want to target and tether and run against 7.1 devices. And so that's what it's for. If you're not going to be using 7.1 anymore, then it won't be required. And as we say here, you'll just have that, it'll just automatically work with a USB connection for Phone 8 devices. We kind of mentioned earlier, you want to register to unlock your phone to make it a developer device. And so you can unlock up to 3 devices and have them registered. And it's a real simple process when you once you've plugged it in and you do, go get your email and you you type in your login credentials, your Windows account, and that device unlocks and you can start debugging against it.
Yeah. So just to stress this, you need a you don't need to have signed up for a developer account for this. And this allows you to unlock your up to three devices as an individual.
All right. And when you have done that and you want to actually deploy to your phone, you know, here, you know, just like we've had in the past, you know, you have your drop down to target where you want to deploy to or where you want to debug. So your target device, whether that's an actual device or an emulator. And so applications are on the phone. Once you deploy an application onto a developer unlocked phone, it's installed alongside other apps that you install on the phone as through normal channels or as well as the marketplace. You can also send your zap file that you've created, the app, to other developers for them to install.
But the key thing here is that when you, as you're developing and you're installing your Hello Worlds onto your device, when you get to your 11th Hello World variant,
ding!
Yeah, you'll get an error because it just limits the number of unsigned apps that you can install onto the device at any one time. So you just have to uninstall Hello World version 1, and then you can carry on with Hello World version 11. So
excellent.
Yeah.
Good. You know, it might be that.
Could be the one you've been looking for, the one that's going to make you a fortune.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or when you do that Rube Goldberg Hello World, and you try to see how complicated you can make it to tell you Hello World, maybe it takes to the 11th app to get it right.
I think it would.
To have the level of complexity.
It would.
Yes. All right, debugging. We have a great debugging experience. And whether you're targeting the emulator or the phone, you know, easy to set breakpoints, to step through your code, to check the variables, the tooltips that we have, makes it real easy to identify what's going on in your code at any given time. Andy talked earlier about this whole optimized image and JIT compiling in the cloud and things like that. Well, it looks like we can do something kind of like that here on the Visual Studio itself if you want to try it out. So rather than debugging, rather than just hitting F5 or hitting the device, you can do Control F5 to start without debugging, or Alt F1 to fire up the phone performance analysis tool, and you can test the performance of your app as a native image versus a JIT compiled, and so you can get a better sense of what the end user will expect.
Yeah, the pre-jitting tools are actually shipped with the SDK, so this is what Visual Studio is running at this time.
Right.
Enterprises can do their own pre-jitting using the tools that are in the SDK if they're doing their own enterprise app distribution.
Absolutely, because the enterprise may not have their apps go through our cloud process or our store or anything.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So the phone emulators, as Andy mentioned earlier, I mean, our emulator runs inside Hyper-V, which is why you need Windows 8, because that's how we support Hyper-V as a client. But it really is the real phone image, just like on a real device. And so you get that emulator with the SDK, and it comes with a lot of extra tools to do some extra simulations. You know, a lot of times you think of an emulator as kind of the dumbed down, I can just do some basic things, but I need the real phone to test out location or accelerometer, things like that. And that's definitely not true with our tools. It's kind of an advantage of using our technology versus some of our competitors, which just kind of give you a basic emulator. And so you get a great simulation dashboard to test out a lot of real-world situations. So that being said, the emulator, especially when we talk about things like performance, is not always going to be your best, most reliable way to predict how things are going to run. It'll test functionality in every way possible, but definitely encourage you to always test against real devices before you deploy, just to get a sense, of how things, because you don't want any surprises. Functional test is very different from end-to-end that user experience and performance. Deploying to the emulator, you just choose which emulator, and Andy earlier went through all the different screen sizes we have, resolutions.
Yeah. So as you can see, we've got four flavors of emulator that's including the SDK. There's the 512 meg, which is now the low spec machine.
Yeah.
WVGA. There's the full WVGA, which is the 1 gig memory. WXGA and 720p. So you can test against it on all those different screen resolutions.
You know, when you see that, and you kind of go back to a requirement of a 64-bit Windows 8 machine, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's not like we're trying to make it more difficult for you to develop. It's common sense. The emulators are going to use so much memory. If you have a 1 gig emulator and the tools running and everything else you have going, you need that extra headroom that you get from a 64-bit address space. So that's the key thing to take away there. The emulator interface, you can interact with it with a keyboard and a mouse. If you have a touch screen, if you have one of these awesome new PCs, devices that they're flooding the market right now with Windows 8, that has the multi-touch, you can use that right on the screen with your fingers and have that same experience.
Works great on the emulator, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then if you need to use the keyboard to type into it, you might notice if you just kind of do it by default, it doesn't respond. And so you reach down and use your page up and page down keys to give you that, oh yes, I'm going to type into the URL, for instance, in the Internet Explorer, things like that. And so that's how you'll switch back and forth if you're doing text with the keyboard. Orientation. We make it easy to flip, go from portrait to landscape and to see how your device will look and behave.
Look, robmiles.com.
See, Rob Miles, he's here.
He's here.
He is here.
He's here.
Right now.
Yeah.
I'm channeling him right now, actually. Camera emulation. So when you're in the emulator, it's just going to take a simple photograph, or a pseudo photograph or something like that. But then you can pull it in and use it for your testing. But I think your best testing, especially if you're, Andy earlier talked about the lenses and all the incredible things you can do in getting into that pipeline, you'll definitely want to go to the next level and use one of these great new devices to see how things are going to work with the best camera emulation. And
so
a quick demo.
Yeah.
Yes. Photo snap.
Yeah. So if we go on the demo machine.
Yes.
Here we go.
Back over
there.
So
this is about as simple an app as you can get. It's just to show off the camera emulation. So there we go. Main page, camera capture task, ignore the photo chooser task, and a photo button click, and then a camera task completed. This piece of genius looks like this. And the app is starting up. And here we go. There we go. And we can take a picture. So this is now launching. This is one of those launchers. It launched into the camera emulation on the emulator. You can see you get this very nice, attractive, colored square goes around the periphery.
Is that like the original Windows NT 3.1 screensaver? It kind of bounced around.
Yeah. And then when you want to take a photo, just click anywhere, tap anywhere on the screen, and there it goes.
Ah.
It's really good.
That's lovely.
That's a lovely picture.
Yeah.
And accept, and it just captures the square somewhere. So you can take another one. There we go. Capture that one. There we go. Accept that one. And then it also stores these away. You can go off and have a look in the camera roll and go and pick one of your pictures out of the camera roll and show that on the screen. So, yeah, nice and simple, but that's the camera emulation in the emulator.
Yes. So great functional testing.
Yep.
Yes, it does it. It works. It's not beautiful. If you want to have the picture of the Bellagio and some of those other things, you want to use your real device. All right, so let's move ahead about location emulation. And I kind of mentioned earlier, our emulator is not just a place to see if it runs or not. We actually allow real-world external environment type, inputs come into the device, even if it's on an emulator. And we do that through, we have these extra tools, the pane, that we can launch out. And so you kind of see here, if you look down there at the bottom, the two little arrows heading to the right, is where you're going to do to launch some of these additional tools. So the first one you can see here when you pull that up is a location emulator. And as it were, it's focused on us here in Seattle and Redmond,
Mm-hmm.
And the great thing here is this is a great way to test, Sometimes it's hard to test a location-based app if it's just you and you're just kind of walking around with it, right?
Tell us about it. I did in Windows Phone 7.0, I did a location app. And it kind of gets a bit tedious walking around with a laptop under one arm.
Tedious.
Yeah.
You probably look silly walking around in an open field with a laptop and a phone.
Yeah.
What is that guy?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, good thing you weren't doing a conversation with it or anything like that. You might look really silly. Yeah. Anyway, so location tools, this is how you're going to simulate. You can do push pins. You can move things around, and it's going to feed those coordinates right into the device. And so you'll really simulate that real-world thing. And not to jump over to the web, but the same geolocation thing that you can test with this tool for your native your apps that you're building in XAML and C# and VB, it also works with the mobile web, because one of the things we support is the geolocation from the W3C working group for that. So it's a great tool whether you're doing, you know, native or web. But, you know, nothing's complete without a quick demo.
A quick demo. Are you going to have a quick demo? Yeah.
How about a quick demo?
Oh, okay. Just so happen to have a location tracker app here.
Get out of town.
Yeah. This is the default track location. So it's a pivot with two panes on it. We've got a map. Oh, there's a map. We can start tracking our position. You see the little icons come at the top there, a little circle? It's now resolving. It sticks the latitude and longitude on this pane, and it actually covers us in the map on here.
And who knows where that is right now?
Well, actually, I was playing with this earlier, and actually we're currently somewhere in the Moray Firth, just near to Edinburgh, as it happens. This is where we're in the sea. But I thought maybe you'd like to see where I live. So this is actually... Llanfairpwllgwyngyll.
Are you sure you want to do this?
No, maybe not.
All your fans might come outside, you know.
Yeah, so there you go. It's in North Wales. Beautiful North Wales on the edge of snow.
No, I think we should zoom in until we can see your house.
Do you want to? Okay. No, maybe we don't. Okay, moving on. Moving on. Anyway, the code for this is this is the example of, we'll talk about this tomorrow in the location, but we have a geolocator object here. And you set your position changed, and then once you start that, you'll get position changed events will fire, which is down here. And then you can set the latitude and longitude to the lat long you're getting, and then we're sticking push pins onto our map control. We'll dig down into the actual logic of that tomorrow, but
certainly
it's not a lot of code to do something really pretty visually pleasing and sophisticated, so it's nice.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's what people want, visually pleasing.
Oh, one thing actually I want to just touch on before...
Just touch.
Before, if we go back to the demo machine, here I'm going to get rid of this pane here, the thing. And actually, I'm going to close the app. This is one big change from you if you're existing Windows Phone 7 application developer. So Visual Studio, at the moment, you can see in the background, it says Location Tracker is running. If I close the app, under Windows Phone 7.1, that would have closed the debug session on Visual Studio.
That's true.
Doesn't happen under Windows Phone 8. And the reason for that is all these great, fancy, great new features we've got in Windows Phone 8 are ways of launching your app. There's a lot, the app-to-app communication and the tiles and speech, all these kind of new ways of launching your app. And you need to be able to debug these situations. So now when you close the foreground app on the emulator or on the device, the debug session carries on going. So you have to go in and actually go into Visual Studio and stop the debug session, stop debugging, in order to close down Visual Studio. So that's a change from your experience as a developer with Phone 7.
Absolutely. All right, let's take a look at the lock screen in the emulator. The lock screen is a good thing to be able to, one of those things, common occurrences that happen with applications. And you need to be able to simulate that in the emulator as well to see what's happening with your app when the lock screen comes up. And so F12 from the keyboard if you want to do it, but we also have this great simulation dashboard. Just from the tools menu, and you can open the dashboard and simulate that behavior that you're going to get when your device is, your app's running under the lock screen. The other thing you can do is network simulation.
This is cool.
Yeah. You know, Andy and I are real networking kind of guys, in addition to database guys.
Yeah.
And so we're big believers you can't make assumptions. Too many people build, you know, we've been building mobile apps forever. And one of the things that's been a big thing with us is people who build apps on a desktop connected to gigabit Ethernet, you know, assume that you're in this perfect utopia world, and that's just not reality of how things are out in the real world. Network conditions are changing all the time.
Try living in Snowdonia, North Wales.
Yeah. Snowdonia, yeah, that almost sounds like a place out of a Disney movie, doesn't it? Yeah,
actually. Oh, I forget. One of those gothic horror movie, science fiction things was filmed near us recently.
It almost sounds like a made-up word.
Clash of the Titans.
Clash of the Titans. Did they release the Kraken on Snowdonia?
They did, yes.
Oh, wow.
We're still recovering from this.
Yeah, I'm sure you are.
Yeah.
So had you tested the networks, there, because sometimes you've got 3G, everybody thinks, oh, I'm going to have this great LTE everywhere. But all you have to do is ride on the TGV at 324 kilometers per hour and notice that you have a spotty GPRS.
That's amazing.
And so much of the real world is more like GPRS. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I can't stress enough how important it is for you to test network simulations, the strength of the signal and the speed of the signal to get, because remember, UX is not UI. UX is the all-encompassing thing. When someone pushes a button,
and it has to go reach out and get information from a web service that network conditions are part of it. So not the la-la land that you were in when you developed it on your gigabit Ethernet PC, but the reality. Remember, there's you and about 1,500 of your best friends hitting the nearest cell tower, and then it's got to go down to the base station, and it's got to jump on the backhaul network and get on the interwebs, and then get to the actual site that you want to go through a DMZ and firewalls, and then queue up on the web service server, and then come back and do that whole thing all the way back again. All of this plays a role in good UX, and network simulation is a critical element, so I can't stress enough how important this is. Not to be outdone, though. Okay, you know, capturing screenshots, another critical thing. People are always asking, how do I do screenshots? So we make it super simple to do that. We have a screenshot tab in these extra tools on your emulator, and you can use that because you're going to need to have some pictures in the market, in the store, to show off the different elements, in it, which helps you sell. The more screenshots you have of different pages in your application, the better. People get a better sense of what your app looks like and does, and they'd be more likely to want to purchase your app. And then on the real device, not to be outdone by the emulator's extra special tools, you can do it on a real device. And so if you just hold the power button and the Windows button down at the exact same time, voila, you get a screenshot. It's saved as like a PNG or something like that. And then you can share it, or you can use it for your own purposes. You could overshare as well on social networks, like Andy is so apt to do. So, to wrap up here, I know we're running way over.
Yep.
But obviously, we have a lot of great new features in the Phone 8. That shared core, that NT kernel running on ARM, you know, on the device. It's amazing, and it's so fast. And it's not just fast because of the hardware. It's fast because the operating system is so optimized. Great engineering by our product group, just great engineering. The XAML plus manage, the XNA manage, we have so much flexibility. Direct3D games, having the C++ exposed with the Direct3D and the support for lots of the different frameworks from that other gaming companies use means we're going to have great games, console-style games that you may not have seen before on Windows Phone 7. Coming to our platform, or they're already arriving, actually, which is just going to make it a more compelling platform for everyone. And then a great takeaway. All those 130,000, 120,000 apps that are already up there now for Phone 7, they are going to work unchanged, except for the quirky things, the edge cases that Andy talked about. And they're going to run on Phone 8, and they're not just going to run, they're going to run fast because we're going to compile them in the cloud. And so you're going to have that native speed, you know, productivity of .NET, rapid development with speed of C++ on the platform. It's going to be great stuff. I'm excited about it. What are you? Are you excited?
I'm very excited.
I can feel the excitement. Absolutely.
Right. Well, we're going to break. I have one very important question I have to answer from the list. Somebody's asking, how do I get the shirt that Andy is wearing? Bribery always works. That's
bribery.
Right.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You could go to the fictitious town that he lives in Wales.
on a serious note, somebody's saying, I wish the developer account was free until you are ready to submit your first app for certification. Well, actually, you can. Effectively, it is free because you can download the SDK for free. As long as you've got hardware to run the emulator, you can develop your app completely up to the point where you're ready to certify, ready to submit, and you only then would you actually be forced to pay up for a developer account.
And you know what? Don't sell that short. If I, you know, not to go back into the mists of time, but when I got started in the mobile business with Pocket PC, when that first iPad came out, I didn't own anything. You couldn't even get the device. But the MSDN had the tools to download this thing called Embedded Visual Basic and an emulator. And I started building apps right away. And then I wrote a book. And the rest is history. So it's huge. All this free stuff. The emulator does a great job. And so it's important work for you to get after.
So I've also been asked, can Andy stand up and show the shirt? Well, here you go, guys. There you go. Thank you. Thank you so much.
That's beautiful.
Wow. So, we're going to break.
We're going to take a break.
We're going to take 10, and then we're going to come back and dig deep into creating an application.
Digging, like Minecraft.
Yep.
Yeah. All right.